And we travel now to Senegal, considered one of West Africa's rising nations, home to a stable democracy with plans for universal health care and education, but where a troubling human rights crisis persists. Kira Kay of the Bureau for International Reporting has the story.
In a sandy courtyard in the city of San Luis, a group of young boys begin their evening prayer studies. They are Talibes, meaning students. And they've come 200 miles from their home villages to live with this Quranic master called a marabou. But their studies have only come at the end of a long, hard day's work, begging on the streets. You see Senegal's Talibes weaving in and out of traffic with their little yellow tubs or rusty cans. It's dangerous, dirty work, up to 10 hours a day. Along with morsels of food, they are hoping for money. They owe their marabou a quota of about a dollar a day. Begging is used to teach Talibes humility and resilience. But this marabou admits it's also a matter of simple economics.
You have to buy these books, medicine, water, electricity, everything you need in life. And the government doesn't give it to us. That's why they beg.
Talibé aid worker Issa Kouyaté says what he sees is more sinister.
The society knows that this marabou treats this boy like a slavery. The government knows this marabou treats this boy like slavery. Most of the marabou abuse these boys.
The Talibé system is unique to West Africa and is rooted in centuries-old tradition, says Imam Mohamed Sharif Diop.
It is assumed that I am not capable of giving my children their necessary education because of my affection, that I will tolerate things that I shouldn't. And so we have entrusted our children to the marabous who live in another village to create this distance to permit a good education.
But Diop agrees the system, so valued in this 95% Muslim country, is now being exploited. With at least 50,000 young boys, mostly from poor families, forced to beg.
It's a staggering number, a huge number who are begging. And they've moved to the big cities because marabous who want to use begging as a source of revenue know that's where you'll find the most donors.
Some of these boys left home so young they don't remember where they came from. They sleep on cement or dirt floors, dozens to a room. And for boys who don't make their daily quota, the punishment can be brutal. Social worker Abdou Fode Sow is caring for an 11-year-old whose marabou beat him with a shredded tire.
With those strips, the boy was hit until he bled. And each time that he came back without money from begging, he was hit again, even though his injuries hadn't yet healed.
This Talibé named Aruna told me he has been beaten more times than he can count. He became a Talibé when he was only 9. Now 17, he resents the years he's been kept a virtual captive by his marabou.
They called me to tell me my mother had died. I wanted to go home, but my marabou said no. Then my father died, and again he refused to let me leave. I still have 3 sisters at home. And if I can get money to buy phone credit, sometimes I'll call them.
I met Aruna at Maison de la Gare, a rare safe haven for boys like him. Here they can wash their clothes, take a shower, get medical attention, and otherwise take a break from their rough lives. And for that moment, those street-hardened boys briefly become the children they should be. The center is run by Issa Kouyaté. He offers local marabous incentives like a new roof or some sleeping mats in exchange for allowing the boys to visit his center in between their begging rounds. But despite years of this work, Kouyaté still finds conditions that shock him. Like this school, just feet from the town's reeking garbage dump.
It's really difficult for me to just understand why he's just living here. I don't know the word how to explain this. It's just like people who are living here are just rubbish.
Kouyaté notices a boy from the center scratching from lice, despite the clean clothes Kouyaté gave him 3 days before. He tries to convince the marabou to move the school before the rainy season floods it with garbage. But Kouyaté admits it will take much larger forces to end the Talibé begging system. A year ago, a candle tipped over in a Quranic school in Senegal's capital, Dakar. 8 boys died in the fire. You can still see their begging bowls in the rubble.
was there, served all
Matthew Wells of Human Rights Watch says this tragedy should have been a turning point.
In the aftermath of the fire, the presidents of the country, a bunch of other leaders, they came and they said, this can't happen again. We have to take action to stop this type of abuse.
And what's stopping the government from taking that action?
You know, I think up to now, there's been a lack of courage. I don't think there's a better word. There's a lack of courage from the government to follow through. It's been thought of as too sensitive, too complicated. And so every time it starts to act, there's a certain group of Quranic teachers who react and say the government's attacking Islam, it's attacking religious education. But there are also lots of religious leaders who spoke up after this event and said it's time for the government to take action. So I think really religious allies are there to support the government, and now it needs to follow through and take action.
That is true, that we can accelerate things. But at the same time, you have to handle things in such a way that they don't backfire on you.
Aminata Touré is the prime minister of Senegal.
The estimates are that there are still 10,000 kids begging just here on the streets of Dakar alone.
What would we do? Just take all the 10,000 kids, send them back to their families. They would come back 1 week later. We have to understand that you're talking to the deep and the core believing of people. One of the policies that we are trying to implement is to come up with the idea of upgrading the Quranic school, giving them a curriculum where we would mix Quranic teaching with modern teaching, with math and French, and trying to give training to the teachers.
This school is considered a model. Besides Quranic studies, it offers regular academics with the goal of advancing its students to high school. The school includes girls, not just boys. And best of all, these students don't beg. Their parents pay a monthly boarding fee. The fees from the richer kids supplement those of the poorer. This pilot program is overseen by Mamadou Bass from the Ministry of Education.
When we visit a school, we look first at the physical condition. Is it clean? Does it have proper bathrooms? Do the children have access to medical care? And then we look at the marabout. Do they meet the necessary requirements to teach? All the schools that fail to comply with the new laws will be completely closed. The schools that do not practice begging will be promoted by the government.
But Bass has only 8 staff and 2 vehicles to inspect the tens of thousands of Quranic schools in the country. Bass is now waiting for a new law to be passed that could give his department more of the support it needs. Meanwhile, it is falling to religious leaders like Imam Job to sway local attitudes. He has partnered with the grassroots group Tostan to bring a message directly to parents and community leaders that child abuse is un-Islamic, no matter where it takes place.
The Quran is here to help people. It is a good thing for everyone who studies it. But to study it, must I live in bad conditions and wear rags? No. I should live in conditions as noble as the Quran is for a Muslim.
And he's going door to door, convincing marabouts to endorse and join the government's modernization program.
If the state wants change, but the community refuses, it won't work. If the community wants it, but the state doesn't follow, that also won't work. We have to combine the efforts of both the community and the institutions.
Back in San Luis, another glimmer of hope. With the help of the Talibe Center, Aruna is now attending a regular school a few hours a day. He wants to become a history or geography teacher. One boy, perhaps rescued from a life on the streets, and a role model for more to come.
This report was produced in collaboration with students from New York University's Carter Journalism Institute. You can visit our website to watch another story from the project on Senegal's promising gender parity law.